to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. Facts and Giants, I'm Tom Hunt. AV on the board. I trust you to watch his kids. S&P futures up 9.25, NASDAQ futures up 27. Kind of celebrating what looks to be maybe a Brexit deal, although everybody says he's have trouble passing Parliament, but I don't know. It seems to me like it's the best stab at it I've seen. So we'll see. I guess we can hope for the best on that. Dow futures are up 91. Interesting. We had a bunch of deaths here this morning. We had Representative Elijah Cummings, who was in the House and he was front and center on this impeachment thing, died sort of unexpectedly overnight in John Hopkins, I think he was. And we have a guy who was a fighter here in Chicago last Saturday night that died this morning from the fight. So, not good news on all that. But, AV, do we have Wayne, or are we still hunting for him? I guess we're still hunting for him. The, last night the earnings were Netflix was up, we had one good and one bad. Well, Netflix, was down initially, then they were up as much as 30-something, now they're up 22.97, trading 309.25. IBM, however, went back to its ways where it was doing seemingly quarter after quarter where a thing got clobbered every earnings, and then it would take the quarter to gain back the money it lost during the earnings, and it would lose it again the next quarter, and we're back into that routine. Stock's down 669, trading 135.42, and the stock really has not been able to get out of its own way. Whatever they seem to gain in cloud, they lose somewhere else. So I don't know if that's, if that's going to be the thing going forward forever for those guys, but they seem to be making some progress, then they're not making some progress, but they go every single quarter, their revenue's down from the quarter before. But, when I was at Pullman, I used to do all the capital expenditure things for like new computers and stuff, and boy, the world was so different. They used to pay, I'm going to say we had a pillbox in Fort Worth. A building that was, totally concrete reinforced, all climate control, the whole bit. A lot of companies did. And why, I don't know why they picked Fort Worth or Dallas, but they did. And these machines, the rent on them was like $20,000 or $25,000 a month. And you had like, 10 or 12 of them because the capability was not even, and then this new one came along and it was the same price, but it did the work of like four or five of the other ones, and then you couldn't give away the other ones, even though you had like another 2 years at 20-some thousand a month, you had to pay IBM, so it was, you wonder how those companies paid all that back in those days for computing stuff, but they did, and the things were all water-cooled, and it was really something, and you had people that had to do all the punch cards at one end, and then all that stuff was transported down there, by teletype. And then they would send back, they would print back up here in those big wide things. And every day there would be a guy walking around with a hand cart loaded to the top with these things. And they'd drop off the one at everybody's desk. And that would be the stuff that you were good at. If you were accounts payable, your run would be all the accounts payable stuff. If you were materials, it would be all the material stuff. And okay to pay, not okay to pay. I mean, it was... things got done. I mean, it wasn't all that inefficient. It's just, you just wonder, it's how much easier it is now, but you wonder if it's actually as much more efficient now as it ought to be. I mean, I sometimes wonder about that, but the funny part was they had a guy who, he quits one day, and every morning he got three or four of these things dumped off at his desk. So the guy quits, and they never turned the thing off. And they, so every day the guy would just drop the four things. Finally, after about 2 months, you couldn't see the desk. It was up about 6 feet. I had no idea what those runs were. Didn't know what the guy wasn't doing or what, but didn't seem to make any difference. The factory still went on as before. I don't know who wasn't getting paid or who wasn't getting billed or whatever, but something weird was happening. But, AV, do we find Wayne or no? I don't know what AV's doing over there. So we had a big blow up at the White House yesterday. If anybody didn't see that, evidently the House voted to say, this deal in Syria where we just pulled everybody out and letting Turkey do what they're doing is, you know, that they ended up, and I don't know if Erdogan went back on what he told Trump or whatever, because now Trump's all outraged at him. Matter of fact, the headline is "Don't be a fool." Now they want to put sanctions on him, and they say "Screw you and your sanctions." So the whole thing, I don't think I've ever seen anything blow up as fast in like 3 days as this thing has. So then Pelosi walks out of the meeting, and her version of it that he had a meltdown. His version of it that, you know, she didn't do what she was supposed to do. So I'm going to say that Washington is not the best place to be right about now. But that's sort of the way that is. We're supposed to be having Wayne Mathis here this morning at some point. AV, we still don't have him? I would say that's a negative. He's here? Wayne, we have you?
Yes, hello.
How are you? We got you. I'm glad to hear you, bud, because I was going to talk about Washington by myself for an hour, and I was going to do that, but what the hell's going on? Are you do you have to like wear a cloak and dagger going down the street in Washington these days or what?
Well, I was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and I was amazed at the dysfunction of a normally dysfunctional government, but the whole city seems to be dysfunctional.
What is going on? I mean, did Trump get played by this Erdogan guy, or what happened here? I mean,
well, apparently Erdogan took Trump's letter, which talked about don't be a tough guy and don't turn into a devil, which is pretty odd for a diplomatic note. In diplomacy, that's called a démarche. He apparently threw it in the trash can over there in his office in Ankara. So he wasn't impressed.
Well, so we pull. From what I understand, we're only talking about 50 people, right? There were 50 U.S. people there, but nobody.
Well, this number keeps fluctuating. We've got what they call these forward operation locations. And then there's some outposts. So the outposts may have, you know, a dozen, maybe two dozen, but there's these other, what they call forward operating locations, like the one we had in this town of Kobani, which could be as many as a few hundred. I heard a total of about 1,000 U.S. forces in that Kurdish zone.
But the idea, from what I understand, and that's what I'm asking, is that with our people there, it pretty much stopped people from attacking, because we wouldn't have thought it was too clever, too nice if our guard.
Although the Turks did hit very close to our positions, and at one point in time they thought they'd have to defend themselves.
Well, okay, so the Kurds, the majority of them live in Turkey, correct?
And actually, the Kurds are spread out between northern Iraq. There is a sizable population in Turkey. A lesser population in Syria. But you also find Kurds in the very northwestern part of Iran. And in Armenia, which used to be the Soviet Union, but is independent now.
Okay, so there's a. I've read that it's the largest group of people in the world. Basically, don't have their own place.
Yeah, and then several times they were promised. The United States has kind of messed them over now. This must be the seventh time we've done this to them. The first president to screw them over was Woodrow Wilson, who in the Treaty of Versailles said, look, we're going to take a lot of these countries in Eastern Europe and elsewhere and give them their independence. So two delegations showed up at the Versailles conference. One was from Vietnam. It was led by a restaurant waiter who lived in Paris named Ho Chi Minh. And the other delegation was that from Kurdistan. Of course, Wilson gave neither one of them or agreed to their independence, and then in a few other cases, the U.S. said we'll support the Kurds, and we turned around and supported whoever they were fighting against, which was Saddam Hussein twice. So that's not been a happy relationship, so I doubt they'll ever trust us again.
That whole Treaty of Versailles, boy, that whole mess, the more I read about it, the more... What a goat bleep that thing was. I mean, everybody was involved in that. They couldn't wait to steal as much as they could for people who didn't have any money.
Right.
The economist who was the man on the scene was what's his name? Keynes, right?
There was a whole gaggle of people there because it was, you know, more than just a peace conference. So, you know, it was more like a huge social event. A lot of people wanted to be seen talking peace at this conference. And Versailles is not a bad place to be either.
So the this was at the palace? They did all this?
It was held at the Palace of Versailles, right?
Wow. And I do recall from one of the books I read that when they signed it, they ended up with 90 or 95% of the then-known oil reserves were on one side of the table, meaning the Allies' side, which pretty much... I've kind of come around, Wayne, into the belief that there was no World War One or World War Two. It was just World War whatever with a 20-year gap.
World War X, yeah. Right. And what we saw in between what they call the interregnum, I've seen it's a Latin... I think it's a belli interregnum, between the wars. You saw a lot of jockeying for position by the victorious Allies, but also because of Versailles, you saw the rise of, you know, the young corporal in Germany.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was a big part of landing the world into the second phase of that war.
Well, I've read, I don't know if you ever read it, but I don't know if I still have it or was a victim of my mother's flood. A book called, was it Downfall or something? Fall of the Dynasties.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't think I've ever read anything quite as mind-provoking. Well, Freedom from Fear I thought was pretty good, but this one, it took every chapter, big long chapter, was one of the dynasties, and it would be the Hohenzollerns. They were Germany, right? And then
the Hohenzollerns were Germany. The Habsburgs were Austria-Hungary. The Romanovs were overthrown in Russia, and the ones normally forgotten about, very pertinent today, are the Ottomans.
That's just what I was going to say. They were part of the whole thing,
and they were.
And then this guy has views, I think, mentally of a pan-Ottoman empire, doesn't he?
They call him Sultan Erdogan, just because, you know, there's some thought with this so-called coup that was launched against him, and he used as a reason to put his opponents in prison and press and generals, is that he actually either was behind it, encouraged it, knew it was going to happen, to let it happen, just so he'd have a reason to tear up the Turkish constitution. Seeing his actions in retrospect, there might be something to that. Latin Americans call that a self-coup, autogolpe, and it looks like a classic case.
Didn't the one knucklehead in Egypt do that?
This has happened in a couple of places. There was one in Thailand as well. They need it. And that's why I think a lot of people are worried about, you know, Trump and some of his rhetoric, which is getting worse and worse. You know, could he try something like that here?
Well, I'll tell you what, all the stuff I get from the people, like, seriously on the right, everything now, the rhetoric has gotten to the point where they'll talk about what's going on in Syria, and now it's this... It's the deep state, but now Trump, instead of being part of that, you know, I don't know why these guys think, if there is such a deep state, which I think you and I think there are some people that maybe have a little too much power in this country. We don't know who the hell they are. But why they all think they're all Democrats, I have no idea. I mean, if you were at that kind of power, why would you care what party you're in?
Yeah.
So, but they are convinced now that Trump is now the lone champion fighting against the deep state. I'm like, what are these? I mean, where are these?
Yeah, I think these people also claim that if you drive too far, you might fall off the edge of the earth. There's these QAnon people who really have some bizarre, far out conspiracy theories.
Coming from you, it's far out. When Wayne says you're far out of conspiracy, you're far out of conspiracy. I would ask you this though, Wayne, and I know you can't. I mean, even if you knew, you probably wouldn't say. But most of the stuff that you get, I mean, the interesting part is, I've tried to expand my mind a little bit, which is hard to do for a Southsider, right? if you stop, listening to essentially what people say, and they're basically half-assed, half-baked solutions that make no sense, either from the right or the left, from half the people. But you try and focus in on what they're observing and what caused them to make this ignorant utterance in the first place. You get a totally different view of things. Instead of listening to what Elizabeth Warren wants to do, of course you sort of have to because she wants to be president, but and actually just look at the things that she sees that look like they're wrong. Same thing with AOC. Same thing with these guys writing me this stuff. It's not like their observations are that far off, that something is seriously wrong. The conclusions, maybe because of, I'll say lack of knowledge, but because lack of knowledge because nobody knows, the conclusions might be all half-baked. But I'm not so sure if you don't put three or four of these guys in the same room with Elizabeth Warren and AOC and the people that they absolutely detest, and somebody gets in the middle kind of as a moderator, you're going to find out that both sides are seeing the same inequities and seeing the same problems. They're just going at the solutions totally different, but they're both seeing the same thing.
Well, I think we've seen a lot of that, in especially in Congress. There are people that are in their camps, and they're not about to reach across the aisle to, make any agreements. There are still, fortunately, some that are willing to do that. The problem is on the Republican side, we see a lot of these people not running for re-election, including John Shimkus, who is from downstate Illinois. He's always been considered sort of an amenable Republican who works with the Democrats. Well, he's thrown his hands up and he's not running for re-election. There's a few others there. So that means that on that side, you've got the Matt Gaetzes of Florida, who I know a bit about since I've been reporting on his various indiscretions over the years. But you got Louie Gohmert from Texas, who is really far out there. And a few others. They're almost like they're in office. Oh, Jim Jordan from Ohio is another one. They're there to disrupt, and that's all they're going to do.
Well, but the one I got last night from these guys. I mean, I've talked on the show for like a long time now, and then I think my people, pretty much all will disagree with me in everything I say, but in regards to a lot of things, we do agree. This whole idea of us sending this money to places and having 15, 20, 100, 200 of our swinging idiots that are not even American anymore. Maybe they used to be, but now they're in this never-never land between countries with a passport from the Isle of Man or some damn place, or where did Grace Kelly go?
Monaco.
Yeah, Monaco or something. And they follow this cash. I mean, I put, Manafort, who's going to jail. Flynn, I don't know if he's going to jail or what he's doing. Biden's kid. I mean, obviously people in the know, and Trump's people must have jumped on this, his two useless kids and the son-in-law. They see this cash going. I get this thing from the deep state guys last night about the stuff in Guatemala and where's the money going. And then they're, of course, the theme of it is, is there's these liberal people around that are somehow following and getting control of this money and causing things to happen in Guatemala and Ukraine and whatever. I don't know that it's Democrat people, but it sure seems to me that there are, if you drop me in the Oval Office tomorrow with my gang, meaning you part of it, the first thing I would do, maybe not the first thing, but I tell people to stop looking at me like they're, like I'm their entertainment. I'm your president, not your entertainer. I don't think anybody wants it anymore. I would put together, if I possibly could, you'd have to pick them for me, three or four people from each side of the aisle, and maybe drop an appeals court judge or a Supreme Court judge in there. I want to know who is following all this money we're giving these people and who's stealing it all. I mean, somebody really has got their finger in that pie, Wayne. I mean, there's a lot of it. I mean, it's got to be to the point where it's way beyond criminal. And I don't think.
The problem now is that a lot of these individuals, like this freaking frack, they just busted.
Yeah, who are those two guys? Where do they come from?
Excuse me. Trying to leave Dulles on a one-way ticket to Austria. I mean, this is part of organized crime. These are the organized criminal syndicates, and you know, all these Russian and Ukrainian oligarchs are heavy into this. You know, this is money laundering, this is drug smuggling, this is human trafficking. That's what they do, or even organ smuggling, human organ smuggling. And it's all dirty money. But, you know, we supposedly had the FBI looking at this. There's a component in the Treasury Department called FinCEN, which you're probably familiar with, Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and a host of others. They're supposed to monitor this, but in this administration, a lot of these entities, and I think Attorney General Barr has a relative, maybe his daughter, who works in the Penn Senate Treasury, which is a real conflict of interest.
Well, I'm going to say, Wayne, that I know several people, unfortunately, that have had money hacked out of something. You know, every brokerage firm has an event. Some have two or three. Every bank has had an event. I know a couple places where inside of firms that you would never dream. You know, firms that are like consulting human resource firms where people have been, you and I are working in the same place and you're my CFO, where you'd get an email allegedly from me telling you to write a check out for 30 grand and send it to Joe. I mean, I've heard this kind of hacking is everywhere. And if you go to our law enforcement people, not the people you see on TV that actually give a bleep, you go to these people, they look at you like you've got four heads. What do you mean you're talking to me? Just pay the person or whatever. The bank, I have a couple of banks around here. I won't mention their names. They got no help, law enforcement. They just said, you know, your systems are no good. You know, we'll like fine you. You know, and to the point where I don't know what these people do all day, Wayne, because they don't even care. They don't want to hear about it. It's like calling the police saying your car got broken into in front of your house. All right, here's the number. Call your insurance company. We'll give you the crime number. Aren't you going to even come out and make a look and give a show like you care? No, God, no. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I was defrauded one time, and I reported it. And the police said, listen, is it over $35,000? I said, no. Take them to small claims. That was the answer.
Yeah, well, you know, but the weird part is, Wayne, is I know somebody who... I think the number was like 200, and it was, if it's under a million, forget it. Except for the part that one of my guys on the north side, I have my north side people, my south side people, different nationalities as you might expect, and I was up there and the guy says, these guys caught us for like $1.2 million. I said, well, somebody investigating that? I've heard the number was a million. No, they told us it was $1.5 million. So whatever your number is, the number's higher, and they don't even look at it.
Right.
I mean, I think it's sinful. I mean, we're paying. When it's almost like your car gets stolen, and a guy comes out and says, "Boy, we got this new ordinance that says you need a deadbolt lock on the garage. We're fining you." for bothering us.
Right.
But I mean, to think that these people actually, and I don't know if it's worse under Trump, better, because it clearly is not caused by him. I mean, this.
He talked about draining the swamp, and it looks like he brought the entire Everglades and Okefenokee swamps into Washington. Because you look at all the departments under Trump, and you've had major scandals in every one of them, and he's waited for the last minute, of course, to get rid of whoever that was in charge. I'm thinking, you know, the EPA guy, Scott Pruitt, was going around on government time trying to buy some special lotion that they gave with the room at the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, what kind of weirdo, you know, does that? He also
Hold that thought. SP Futures up 1150. NASDAQ Futures up 38. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamana. She's AV. Angelica Vasenko on the board. Mr. Wayne Mattson with us from Washington. We're talking about what the hell is going on out there. S&P futures up 1150. NASDAQ futures up 36. A lot of this has to do with somewhat of a hopeful Brexit deal where they have some kind of a very complicated, maybe Wayne will explain it to us, arrangement going to go on the Irish border that somehow British guys are going to check the stuff going over the border and figure out if it's the EU type of stuff or not, and it seems like it's a little bit it's kind of a little bit out there, but if it passes Parliament, it appears like it's going to be a very, very close vote, and right now the call is maybe it won't pass, but it's the first time they've actually had some kind of a breakthrough with the European Union kind of people. On the earnings front, we've got Netflix up $23, trading $309 as they came out with better than expected. IBM though down 734, so that's in the Dow, so it's dragging 56 points in the Dow. AV, why don't you give us traffic, weather, sports? Well, my computer has decided it's going to do something weirder, but I'll be back in a second. Why don't you do the traffic,
sure,
weather, sports?
Good morning, happy Wednesday, everyone. It's 6:35 a.m. 44 degrees currently in Chicago. Looks like the day will be sunny with few clouds. The highest will be 54. And the lowest 42. Expected to get some winds by the end of the day as the temperature drops. In the Phoenix, 71 degrees right now, partially cloudy, but overall very nice and hot day with the highest 95 and the lowest 65. In traffic, we have only one accident reported on Dan Ryan, I-1994 westbound at Garfield Boulevard. Doesn't look like it's causing major delays, and general traffic image looks pretty clear, but seems like it's about to get heavier, especially on the busiest expressways as Eisenhower near Broadview, Stevenson northbound, downtown as usual, so just be aware.
I'd turn back if I was you.
No, not yet. It's too early.
Okay.
We still have some time. We have hope. Let's see what's going to be like in 1 hour.
Well, we have the Dow futures up 90. Again, some of that, despite IBM being down $7. Over in Europe, we've got a little bit of a celebration, not huge on the Brexit, but everybody's up a little bit. DAX up 41.3%, FTSE up 32.4%, CAC around up 2, let's call that flat. I'll get Wayne's opinion on this in a second. I'd be stunned if this thing doesn't go through. I mean, it seems to me about as good as you can get for those guys. Nikkei down 21. Evidently, they think that the Brits owe them a lot of money, which is a little bit of a problem. Nikkei down 21, call that flat. Shanghai down 1, call that flat. Hang Seng up 184.6%. Bonds were at 177, so again, we're up a little bit more again. The Bund, wow, minus 0.37. Again, it bottomed out at minus 0.79. Japan up down negative 0.15, which is up as well. Oil down 42 cents, 52.94, still trading this very narrow range. Brent 59.02, down 40 cents. Natural gas 2.33. RBOB $1.60, so not much going on there. But gold down 90 cents, 14.93. Silver up 11 cents, almost back up to, 17.54, trying to make its way back to 18, but still a ways away. Wayne, we were finishing a point, but also Representative Cummings, am I going to start seeing, things coming flying across my email that he was bumped off or what?
No. Congressman Cummings had been in ill health for quite some time, and of course he was one of the lions of the House. Been there for several years, very much an institution in Baltimore. But I'm not sure who is the next in seniority to him being the chairman of the House Government Oversight Committee, but I'm sure it's somebody who will be able to handle it. But yeah, that was of course everyone knew he was in not very good health. I mean, he had been in the hospital quite recently and was in a wheelchair and for a while on crutches. But it's always a bit of a shock when somebody who. I always thought that he had been an ex drill sergeant in the military because of the way he used to tell the members of the committee, and he has sort of an unruly bunch there. He'd say, "All right, everybody, listen up." last time I heard that was when I was in the Navy. You know, listen up. But no, he had never been in the service, but he sure could have played a drill sergeant on television. That's probably what they needed at the time in the House. It's a big loss for Baltimore, and I would say a big loss for the country because anytime you get somebody with that sort of corporate knowledge of things that happened, you know, in the House 30 years ago when he was there, it's a loss.
Well, the sometimes, unfortunately, even though it's probably not politically correct, but it can be accurate, and I don't know anything about the man's medical history, but sometimes, various ethnic groups have seemingly different issues when they grow older. And I know high blood pressure and diabetes is tough among African Americans, and I don't know if that was what it was, but I know some of my friends, as their parents of age, that's been somewhat of a problem. And then you get other groups that have other issues. You know, a lot of Irish people have their problems. You know, it all comes out of, I guess, the gene pool, but...
You're right. I saw he died at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, which probably bought him a few years. That's a very, very good hospital. Whatever his medical issues were, I'm quite certain that had he not had access to a top hospital like that, we may have lost him a few years back. But I think... Johns Hopkins probably kept them alive a few extra years.
Well, Wayne, what is the scuttlebutt in Washington about this latest Fed action? I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather on Friday when they came out with that. I mean, we've been talking for pushing 3 weeks now because my brother, Dan Howe, president of PTI Securities, he really watches, for his clients and ours, watches the Fed balance sheets and things like that, and he all of a sudden he shot me this thing 2 weeks ago. He says, we put more money into the system and a balance sheet than at any time since 2008. It was like $88 billion in 1 week. And when he started talking about these repos not being a big deal and this and the other thing, and of course, the people around the show, Carl Denninger and people like that, are like, "Wait, whoa, something's wrong." You don't just all of a sudden need $80 billion overnight. They can blame it on corporate income taxes all they want, but that's a hunk of BS. And all of a sudden it was supposed to be 1 day, then 2 days, 3 days, and all of a sudden 2 weeks later, they're still doing it. Now all of a sudden don't call it QE. They're gonna pour $60 billion into the place monthly between now and you look at these stock prices, and I'm mad at myself for not buying last night because they're down a little bit yesterday. Wayne, and they talk about no inflation. The asset inflation is jumping up by gobs. I mean, it's like, a baseball team that was worth $200 million 3 years ago is now what, $4 billion or something. I mean, some of the asset prices, even though you do have real estate in some areas going down, I mean, some of this stuff is just. I mean, what are these guys doing? Why? What is the reason why these guys? We need $60 billion a month into the system when they're already growing the money supply by 7 or 8%. What's going on?
Well, we've never had a president who has been so personal in his attacks on the chairman of the Fed, and I'm just hoping that all of Trump's bluster hasn't forced the Fed into doing things that they might not have normally done, because they've said, "Oh my God, we don't want him yelling at us again." You know, it's bad enough how he attacks them, this may be this is just my thought. Is I don't think you mess with certain institutions in Washington. You don't mess with the federal courts, which Trump has done. You don't mess with the Fed, which he has done. And as Trump is finding out now, you don't mess with the U.S. Foreign Service Corps, because that certainly has come back to bite him. And you don't mess with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he's done that. So, I'm thinking it's you know, when these institutions like the Fed have to react and do something pretty odd. Now, we've never really seen that before. I'm just wondering whether it has to do with the rhetoric and the yelling from the Oval Office.
We've had people in the last 3 days, this Cooperman guy, I won't say anything bad about him, or Trump. I mean, we've gone with this, I don't know how it even got started, Wayne, but the idea is we're into this wealth barometer. And obviously wealth in the country is, if you could pick one number, it's the stock market, is people's view of wealth. Even though, you know, houses could fall for people at, you know, middle class, nobody cares, or lower class, nobody cares about that. I mean, but the point is, if the market, so they've absolutely, we have gone somehow, in my opinion, and I like your reaction to it, to a totally bifurcated economy, to where there's the economy, where you had retail sales yesterday down when they're supposed to be up. So if you average the 2 months between August when they were higher than they should be and last month, it's basically bump along growth. And it's actually under, the growth is under the inflation number, even the inflation number they come up with, which isn't very good. So if you, but the idea being, somehow or another, it's the Fed's responsibility to keep the stock market up through the election, because that's how Trump is telling everybody he's grading himself. And over the weekend, he kept tweeting out that if Warren gets in, the market will be down 50%. And he's got Cooperman on CNBC bleating the same thing yesterday like a dying goat. All right, you know, if these people get in, your market's going to go down 40%. You know what? I mean, so now it's to the point where the Fed has to, no matter what, we could all be broke, but the asset prices are going to be high, because that's how people view their wealth, or at least the people who care, that we care about. So, I mean, people always sort of cared about the stock market, but it was never like this. I mean, you never saw any president that I know of, John Kennedy, you know, do his inaugural address and say, by the way, since I got elected, the stock market's up 50 points, and it's going to be up more, and by the way, you're all going to be wealthy with me. I mean, I've never heard anything like that. And yet but I mean, people believe it. I know there's people close to me. Every group you named that basically has pushed back against this guy, well, they're just not giving him a chance. They don't like him. He's from the outside. You can see how bad the deep state is. They won't let anybody in. I
mean, yeah, right. You know, here's the thing. You got to be honest. Trump has failed in every business venture he's gotten involved with. Period. His hotels, you know, they're only in business because of the fact that he took a lot of dark money from overseas. His condo units are only successful because he allowed them to be used for money laundering and hiding wealth. As far as all the other stuff, Trump University, Trump steaks, Trump vodka, Trump water, I mean, all these things were, you know, these were scams and schemes, and none of them went anywhere.
But a lot of people sell their names for this.
He thinks he's a great businessman. He's one of the worst businessmen on the planet. You look at his you know, his record, and it's just a string of failures. Or, I mean, the fact that his daddy was very wealthy, he got millions of dollars from his father, and he squandered most of it in the casino business in Atlantic City, which also went under.
I'm going to push back a little bit, Wayne. I mean, as you know, I'm no supporter, but I've been in business, my own business, my whole life. I mean, it's all been the trading business pretty much, but the things that happen when you're not in the in-group, okay, I mean, you would never have guessed in 1989, 84, with thousands of people on the trading floor, you know, making markets, competing, fast forward 25 years, and that would all be given to two people or three people, and never be out of work. I mean, as much as I would like to slam Trump whenever I could, I have to be fair. I mean, when I say fair, when he opened the casino or two or wherever he had in New Jersey, they basically screwed those guys to the wall in terms of taxes, in terms of this, that, and the other thing. And it's X number of miles from New York City and Philadelphia. And how many years later did somebody get the bright idea to basically let the world's biggest casino, the Indian Casino in Connecticut, open with basically none of the same tax issues? They're closer to New York. I mean, you're like, it's like you paying taxes, you know, in Chicago for a video poker game, and all of a sudden a guy across the street doesn't pay any taxes. I mean, we screw people constantly in this country by making things uneven. And I think, but in regards to your other stuff, I think when people get big enough, I mean, unfortunately, you and I aren't, because your name is on the business or the building, doesn't mean you're part of it at all. I mean, if Wayne Matson was, you know...
Right, he sold his brand,
yeah.
Right? His brand was, you know, sort of jet set type, you know, Trump. It's gold-plated. The issue is now that his brand is not worth much of anything because his name has been taken off several buildings where...
Well, that can happen.
They were paying for the brand.
But for Dr. J's birthday a couple of weeks ago, Audrey bought him a bottle of Michael Jordan vodka. Now, do we think Michael Jordan knows anything about this vodka, could care less about it, or if the place goes under it, that anybody's going to care, I mean, or he's going to care? I mean, if they paid the guy $100,000 for his name, he took the check and said, do what you want to do. I mean, that unfortunately is what's going on in this world, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, I don't know if Trump owns much of this building in Chicago. Yeah, I'm sure they paid him for the rights, the naming rights.
Yeah, if he doesn't own it, we know who does. It's, you know, some unsavory character.
Probably. Well, I'm not debating that. I'm just saying that, you know, your name can get on all this stuff. Who's the guy who's the high-end vodka now in Chicago that's, he was in the ER. What the hell's his name? It was like George Clooney's vodka. I don't know if George Clooney, I actually think he might be involved in it. You know what I got a thing from yesterday? He's speaking at the at this big marijuana conference next week that Benzinga's running. That I'll probably have a thing to talk about tomorrow on the air. Jim Belushi's in the marijuana growing business in California.
That makes sense. About his brother,
yes. But so there's no hint that you're finding. I mean, Carl's absolutely convinced that there's a bank in trouble somewhere that nobody will loan to. That's why the Fed has to pour this money into the system. You've heard no rumors whatsoever or anything like that?
No. I'm invested with my 401k in the stock market, but I think whenever there is angst about the government, I don't think it did very well in the summer of 1974, which saw Richard Nixon resign in lieu of being impeached and removed from office. I don't. When you've got an unstable government, I just don't see how people are going to be making any sound investment decisions in an environment like this.
Funny you should mention.
I've looked at other countries where I've seen instability cause the value of their currency to drop, hyperinflation.
Wayne, funny you should mention that, because I was asked to be on a show the other day as a guest, like you are on my show, and the lady, Joan Esposito, I'll play her name, asked me to come on and talk about the history of the market during impeachment hearings, right? Well, obviously, I couldn't go back to Andrew Johnson. I don't know if there was a market. There probably was something.
But you do remember Garfield, right?
No, that wasn't around for him either. But the last two, obviously, I remember. And I went back and did some research. And the hard part of it is that I couldn't separate. Both of them had dramatic world events that happened during the process. First of all, I didn't realize the process, both of them, lasted like 14 months. It was a long process. I mean, a lot of crap happened.
It was.
But Nixon, when you talk about Nixon, I mean, I think you need to, like, at least be aware, which you probably are, that in the middle of the process came the Arab oil embargo.
Absolutely. It was called the oil shock.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if, if David of Israel was the king, it would have made any difference in the market there. To me, the impeachment process got totally overwhelmed by that. And Clinton went down as the process started, and because there was all kinds of risk with this long-term capital management. And I'm gonna blob one out there at you, Wayne. You might not know the Fed bailed those guys out, not just through the system. They let those guys trade their way out of it. They had a discount rate cut or a federal funds rate cut on an expiration Friday morning in the OEX, which is a big deal. in the middle of the morning, and we were down, and we flew back to the upside like there was no tomorrow. And I knew a couple of my best friends were carried out and never traded again. It was that big of a turn. And these people, the right people, essentially were given. It was almost like in Casablanca when Rick gets the guy the money for the letters of transit on the crap table.
I'm shocked to find gambling in this establishment.
Well, remember when he said put it on what, 24 black and let it ride? Then he said, okay, now get out of here. And then one guy says to him, is this place straight? You know, I mean, so anyway, they basically refloated those guys by letting them front run. And when I went out to a World Series game when I was the head of the marketing committee, a couple of the guys from the member firm said to me, I got a call from the Fed. They want to know how bad people got hurt in the pits when they did that. And I said, well, I know two or three people that will never trade again. Oh, yeah, well, they'll be sorry to see that. Not that sorry, Wayne. Not that. There's some people they help and some people they don't. And it is this directional helping, to me, has always been something that bothered the hell out of me. But something in the Clinton situation was just the opposite. Well, so that happens. So in the middle of the impeachment process, one of the first dot bomb company, this was like 1998, goes out at a price of like $9, Wayne, and that day it trades 89. It was, you know, go.com or something. That's what started the dot-com bubble, which raced the market for the rest of the impeachment process to where, at the end of the impeachment process, the market was way higher than when it started. So, but I mean, it had nothing to do with Clinton or Nixon. I mean, those two periods had an amazing amount of external events. It's impossible to separate, you know, the market reaction to the impeachment itself. At least I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, the Clinton, I remember that all too well, unfortunately. I mean, the administration was chugging along just fine. I think that, you know, a lot of people knew that Clinton was being hit with, oh yeah, look, it's inappropriate what he did, and you know, nobody really thought that Clinton was going to be removed from office. It's almost like it got Clinton involved in some issues, realizing he didn't have many more years left in his second term, and some things were done, and that's a good thing, I would think, for stability purposes. And the Nixon, you know, remember, it wasn't just Nixon. We had the vice president resign because he got caught taking bags of cash in the vice president's office in Washington.
Wayne, refresh me on that.
It was unbelievable. The whole, you know, Nelson Rockefeller's vice president, Gerald Ford, then Rockefeller. I mean, you know, who's on first?
Wayne, refresh my memory on that. I thought when Spiro, what a classic guy he was, I thought when he resigned, it was all because of the stuff he did when he was the Maryland governor that had nothing.
No, actually, he was crooked enough to be taking payoffs as vice president. It was both as governor. Actually, they got him for when he was county executive of Baltimore County.
That's what I thought.
Actually,
yeah.
Went further back in his career.
So I thought he was that none of the stuff happened when he was vice president. You're saying it did?
It did, yeah, yeah. And it was, believe it or not, it was, you know, the paper grocery bags full of cash.
That's the way I'd do it.
At least he did it the old-fashioned way. Now they, you know, they open up an account in, as you said, the Isle of Man or Cayman Islands or something. And
the Illinois guy? Was it Paul Powell, or was one of those guys when he would go down to Springfield, and if he had to stay there a week for, you know, something going on with the legislature, he would bring, he had all his money in cigar boxes. I mean, where do you even find a cigar? Well, I guess they still have cigar boxes, but he would bring them to the motel with him. He didn't want to leave them in his apartment. He'd have like 40 cigar boxes full of cash piled up on the coat rack in the motel. I mean, you know what? You got to love those kinds of days when you ask your own dough. Now you got backpacks and all the other stuff. Makes it way more convenient. It was harder to carry stuff around before you had backpacks and gym bags and yoga bags like AV brings in. Now she could have $30,000 worth of cash on her. Nobody know. Now in those days,
right.
you had a brown paper bag or you had
some. Well, before I covered the Bernie Madoff trial and sentencing in New York, I never heard the term an inch of 50s until I talked to one of his aides at Madoff Securities. He said that on Friday, Bernie would tell him, hey, look, go over to Citibank and get me an inch of 50s. And that was his, you know, for Friday night and walking around money, in New York. It's $5,000. I never even heard the term an inch of 50.
You wouldn't believe it. Now it's closed to show you how bad the demise of the trading floors have been. But the Harris Bank unit in the Board of Trade building on a Friday, or especially a Friday around Christmas when guys, you know, you're not supposed to give more than $50 to somebody on the trading floor. Hey, if you got a quote reporter near you that's been helping you out for a year, $50 doesn't cut it. Sorry, SEC. You know, but they must have had thousands of those little envelopes with the cash envelopes, and guys are getting, you know, $5,000-$6,000 one after another. It was like going to a, you know, Vegas sports book, for God's sake. I mean, the amount of cash that would pile out of that place, and really any Friday, much less a Friday during December, was. Wayne, give us a shameless plug. How do people find you?
Oh, I'm at WayneMatsonReport.com, and, you know, it's all the news that's not fit to print, and
there you
some
go.
Of it which is.
All right, thanks, buddy. As usual, good stuff. SP Futures up 975, 925, 9. It's moving here. NASDAQ Futures up 31. Be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happened.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Fari with us.
Hello.
Hey, Fari, how are you? SP Futures up 10.
I'm good. How are you, sir?
All right. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 31. Earnings news. We have Morgan Stanley to the good side, up $1.81.
Yes.
44.60. IBM the other way, the wrong way, down 7.61 now. 134.50. And Netflix, even though they missed on subscriptions.
Wait a second. Did Morgan they sold Morgan Stanley?
No, they came out with earnings that were good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But you said the other way now.
No, the other way is IBM. Is down.
Oh, sorry, I lost that. Okay, this is...
No, IBM, Morgan
very
Stanley up.
Very high-quality connection.
Netflix up and IBM down. So
Gotcha.
That's what we got.
And Morgan beat very nicely at the $44 stock. So.
Yeah, we have one thing here I want to lob at you, Farah, is just people, as the Fed is doing their shtick and... But you know what? You know how you can sort of lie without lying? Everybody, we do that a lot now with statistics. And if you're really good at it, you can go back and forth from like the mean to the median and basically give any story you want to give. And I try not to do that. But as people talk about how great the market is doing because we're up 20% this year. But if you go back to the beginning of 2018, we're only up a couple of percent, right?
If you go back 2 years, we hardly
moved. We hardly moved. Yeah. So,
but that's not to say Wall Street has not done very well.
No. I demand not playing
the Wall Street is this is Disneyland every day. I mean,
well, I'm saying
the greatest gift that was given to us was the Grampino.
Well, the other day,
behavior.
You know, we were up in the
I'm
calendar
not complaining.
Year, and not the calendar year, but the fiscal year. I'm not disparaging anything. I mean, I've got my people nice and along. I'm happy this week. And actually, gold came back a little yesterday. But I mean, this is interesting. Well, if you use the S&P number this year, which you really shouldn't, you should probably go back to January 1st of 18, not 19, to be more precise.
No.
But if you're dumb enough to use the one this year, because this guy's making a point in this article, the S&P is up 20% this year. Earnings growth is expected to climb by just 1%.
Yeah.
But if you look at the market from...
One is the charts, one is the economy.
If you look at from 2018...
The reason it's up 20% because we had a horrible Q4.
Right. Well, my point is, if you were to rewrite this article...
It's just saying, Obama did a great job in 2009, not really, with the Glass-Steagall Act gone... It took us about 8 years, and we went into a hole. Anybody from there would have come up very hard.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we got to be even. We can't take sides. We got to be intellectually honest with ourselves, with our family, and our friends. And that's how you analyze this.
Well, I'm saying I could rewrite the sentence by saying, while the S&P 500 is up 2% since January of 2018, profits are probably up 2%. So if you take the two-year thing, they're up about the same a piece, right?
Okay.
But if you say this year, it looks like the S&P is up 20% and the market's up 1%, then it's way ahead of itself. But that's not really true, is all I'm saying.
Okay.
And I love it when people do this because usually I can figure out they're doing it and I catch them. Just saying. Once in a while, anyway.
Yeah.
Not all the time. You can blow stuff by me more often than you should be able to, Fari, still, I think. So what's going on with the Fed? Why are they? I don't seem to have anybody around. Who with all the other stuff that was going back and forth last Friday with the Brexit, the Chinese thing, the Fed to sneak that one out there on a no news Friday to basically got no headlines, no nothing. They essentially are doing another QE, even though don't call it QE. My question
is, QE is coming.
It's already here. $60 billion a month for the next next year, right?
Yeah, it's coming. And I don't know how what it added last time. Why are they doing it now? But you know what? Maybe that suits the politics right now. I don't know.
Well, if you listen to Carl, we're talking about a $1 trillion deficit next year again, and the Fed has just told Grumpino that they'll pay three quarters of it. So they're going to make up $720 billion, and they're going to fund the deficit.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, our debt will be $23 or $24 trillion instead of the $22 it is now.
Yeah. Listen, 1% move in 30 years adds $11 trillion to the debt during the life of that 30 years.
Well, yeah. Not exactly.
I didn't do the math. Wall Street Journal printed it. If they have a problem, you can write to them. But that's what there was. That was what was projected.
All right, but what?
1%. I mean, obviously, the issue is where you are. That 1% from 7 to 8 is very different than 1 to 2, right?
Well,
you agree on that with me?
Yes, but if look, they got to let's make it easy. There's a $20 trillion deficit. It's actually 22 or something.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about current deficit. I'm saying if you issue a 30-year debt, new 30-year, because they were talking about they want to do 50-year.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you saw that or not. Right. Somewhere I read that they were looking possibly the Treasury was looking at going for a 50-year debt, but while the rates are low, right? Okay. If IBM can do it, why can't they do it? Yeah. So here's the thing. If the calculation was if we were at X, right? We go X plus 1 in percentage point and yield to maturity. Over 30 years, it adds $11 trillion to the debt we have.
And I'm going to say not exactly.
Okay. Tell me what's wrong.
Well,
tell me where Wall Street went wrong. Why Wall Street Journal went wrong.
Because the people that are getting the 1% extra pay taxes.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, okay. I agree with you there. Okay. But that this is all these calculations are pre-tax, you know that.
Right.
Right?
But what I'm saying is there's no such thing as doing one thing.
Correct.
You know that.
Correct.
Every time you do something,
there's multiplier effect and ramification. I realize that. You're absolutely right. They were just calculating what the impact on this.
Well, I mean,
to take that argument one step further, what you're saying, Grumpino can come and say, you know what? It's not bad that we have all this debt, but we're paying the interest, so they're going to pay some taxes back to us.
Right,
I know.
But that's true.
That's beside the point. That's not what we're looking at.
So, you know,
it's a fact that I think we have entered a slippery slope. I think they don't know how to slow it down. They don't know how to address it. They don't even bring it up. Instead, we talk about alligators by the wall.
I'm gonna say far, and I should.
That's all.
I don't want to go too far with this, but I'm gonna.
Country with this smart, this much resources, this much science, cannot keep his house in order.
But we don't. When I didn't do so well in his class, mainly because he said I could take the second half of a 2-part class, and they were separate, and they weren't Milton Friedman, so I was never real happy with him as a teacher. Even though it's always nice to tell people he had Milton Friedman as a teacher. He would always say something simple like this. Fed cuts rates from, 2 to 1.75, analyze that from a stock and flow analysis for the next 20 years. Well, you got in the habit of having to think forward and say, no, if I do this, now this happens. Now, if that happens, then this happens. This is not, if I had to, as I said the other day, for my biggest criticism of not only this administration, but really the last four, maybe even back to Tricky Dick, who actually was a pretty smart man, maybe not the most, whatever, but I don't think these guys, I mean, this guy, for one, doesn't think past his next trip to the can. I honestly don't believe so. I mean, the idea that, okay, now, interest rates are 1.75, we're going to cut them to 1, or we're going to cut them to 0.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Having interest rates at 0 means none of your people in the country make money on all their savings, all right, which is not...
The covenant with the net savers are broken.
Yeah, so they don't... Now, if they don't make any money on their savers, how many less roofs do we put on our windows do we replace? And oh, by the way, those people, if they make money, they pay taxes, and then they go out and buy something else, and those people make money. I mean, you can shut down the windows of growth when you intercept the process. You can't just say, because obviously the dummy amongst us would just say, wow, if we can get this interest rate from 2 to 0 and our debt's $22 trillion, that's $440 billion a year. We should do that. Yeah, but it's not just you. It's the other side. You know, I mean, it's just like, what's his name? Mattis the other day said, or Petraeus, one of the two guys was on, he goes, like with the Turkish situation. He goes, the problem in wartime is you don't get to do your thing. The enemy has a vote.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets to do what he wants to do. You know, I mean,
Rumsfeld said, when we start a war, we have a plan. The plan is good about the first 2 hours.
Yeah.
Then you got to come up with a different plan. So I agree with that. Yeah.
What is
by the way, Miss Mattis on the talking circuits. I guess I'm.
What is going on? What do your elves tell you about this Turkish situation?
I understand Grumpina went crazy at him yesterday.
Yeah, did he totally misread this guy? Did this guy did Grumpino think that this dude assured him he wouldn't be doing this stuff, and now he is? This is like, this reminds me of Jimmy Carter.
I don't know what he was told.
This reminds me of Jimmy Carter with the,
but
the Ayatollah. I mean,
some sort of a deal. I just cannot. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by nature. I'm a data guy. I got to see facts. It just, the smells. Something has worked out. And not recent. This is not a recent deal, I don't think. It's something worked out. Excuse me. Listen. Typical KGB, KGB, and FSB. These are seeds. They're planted years in advance. So there's no immediate correlation. By design, the correlations are cut by many, many scissors. Okay? This, something was done way past. I find this very interesting. You got Turkey who just bought stuff from Russia. I think SA-300s or 400s. I don't know if they give them 400s. These are fairly decent. This is like our Patriots. They're fairly decent ABMs. Ground to air ABMs, anti ballistic missiles. They got and also they could be used for aircraft too. But then they have who's around the area? You have Russia, you have Iran, you have Syria, and now Turkey. And I have friends in Haifa, I have friends in Tel Aviv. I wonder what's going through their mind right now.
Well, I don't.
Okay. This was.
Farrah,
this
you
is,
know more about this than
King
me.
Trump.
This
was the best guy after Benny Netanyahu, Bibi. Letting your friends go.
If you don't want to answer this, don't. But something. Who's actually in charge of this mess? Is it Putin and his? Is there some? With all this money flying around overseas. We talked about that earlier in the show. Who's getting their finger in it? Who's diverting it? Where's it all going? I mean, who exactly are the players in here, and are they manipulating governments?
Yeah, I don't know. OPEC. We're average citizens. In a big chess game, so when truth may never come out, but this thing with listen, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey has had a minority population for Kurds for thousands of years. Okay, my ex-wife is an Iranian Kurd. I mean, she learned how to shoot rifles, not guns, but rifles, and horseback at the age of 10. These are tough people, okay? An elegant lady, but that's how she was raised in Iranian Kurdistan. Yes. Now look at Iraq. Soleimaniyeh is where this is the only part of Iraq, by the way, that's clean and safe and operational. It's the southern Shia Iraqis. For vacation, they go to Soleimaniyeh. Okay. So the southern part. They decide that if they want to have a good time, they go there. And, of course, the other side, Erdogan has come very hard on. Now, part of it is also they have had terrorist activity. You know, when you get into violence, obviously, that's no way to change a government. It has to be democratic processes. But he doesn't allow to have democratic processes. You know, so then these are resorting to guns. So there have been some killings there. There have been some raids on the police stations, all that. This is southeasternmost part of Turkey.
Fari, what is? Well, go back to your ex-wife for a second, and not why she dumped you, but the when you have something like that where your people are living essentially three or four different countries. How do you even decide?
They've always wanted self-determination.
Yeah, but how does...
But nobody gave it to them, you know.
But how does everybody... How do you even...
Saddam was there and Shah was there.
But you don't have
the Kurdish population were controlled.
But you don't but have
they
the
always wanted... Because they're afraid. If they get together, that would be a big country. It's going to be small. It's not going to be like a Kuwait.
No, but I'm...
Civil size of Kuwait.
Is, how do you...
And with a very strong-willed population, and a lot of them are armed... Because they live in they're very rural areas. It's like going through Montana. Okay, nothing wrong with having guns in Montana. You need for your protection, and you know, you have animals and all that. But that's how Kurdistan is, and very mountainous. You have to survive some.
Well, what?
Crazy
how do you
temperatures?
Hamadan
in Iran is a capital of Mauds 3,000 years ago. That was a capital of Iran back then.
Sorry, how do you have an election?
Hamadan has an Air Force base.
But how do you fund schools? How do you have an electoral system? How do you figure out who the hell's in charge, and how do you run the place if you're...
Well, Shah managed that. He had put, he had province, governor generals. They had cities built. I was going to say, my dad used to take me to Hamadan. It was an old city, a beautiful architecture, and a lot of it is national historical monuments. But it had a brand new top of the line air base that the U.S. Air Force built with Iranian contractors, and the second fighter wing was there, which is all F-4s and F-5s. And those were in charge of making sure, along with Dasfur, which is Ahvaz near Khorramshahr, right by the Fav Peninsula, right Chateau Arab, right where Iran and Iraq waterway pours into northwestern part of Persian Gulf. Those two air bases, Dasfur, which is a third fighter wing, and second one was Hamadan. They protected all of the west of Iran. They protected all that airspace from two air bases. So you had this combination of incredible weather, scenery, old and new. You had some of the best technologies there at the same time. And there's a Sad Dez, which is the dam of called Dez. It was an incredible feat of architecture. They built this. I think Germans built this, or maybe it was U.S. built, I forget, years ago. And next to free hydroelectric for all that areas. That's why the population grew in that area, because of this dam. And if you fly over it, it's not Hoover Dam, but it's fairly close to it.
Really?
There's nothing like that in the Middle East, not even Aswan Dam on the Nile. So, you know, that whole area has a very long heritage, and anybody who was in charge always kept the Kurds under their little thumb, but then in this day and age, when everybody has some form of self-determination, you press that down, they're going to resort to arms. You know, look when Shah pressed too hard, you had a lot of the terrorism activity in over the mountains of Tehran, on the other side, near Caspian Sea. The areas were unsafe. So then what do? You resort to gendarmerie and then army. And this is what is doing to Erdogan.
So now,
were protected in between, we were the buffer zone. Who gave that green light is my issue, I want to know. And ramification of, 12,000 ISIS. And there's a talk that we were taking the high-value the targets out, HTVs out, HVTs out. Already, if they've already, the places were abandoned. You know, we sent two F-15s yesterday afternoon, and they blew some of the buildings we had built there ourselves, and some ammo. Admiral Starvisis, it was on 11th hour last night. He comes from... Annapolis, as a matter of fact, one of the guys who worked for him is a guy 2 years behind me, Mike Milley, who's now chairman of Joint Chief of Staff, who was our hockey captain at Princeton. He was talking about him. but also services. I didn't know that. He follows me on Twitter. He's with the Tufts School of International. You know, he's retired, but he's a four-star admiral. And they do a lot of policy stuff and so forth. Anyhow, I know his face because I've seen him make a comment or two. But anyhow, here's my point is, he said something very important. Any army, any air force, any armed forces that blew up their own building in a fast retreat, it's a sign that there's going to be a huge vacuum. And that whole area is going to fall into a spin. And I don't remember exact term. I have it on TiVo. I have to go back. But he was very eloquent, and he said, if anything history has taught us, when you pull back so fast that you blow up your own building, Kurds do the same thing. Kurds in this base, Lafarge base, they burned their buildings, and we hit from the air. We sent two F-15s with precision bombs and hit the buildings we had and plus some ammo over there. When you do that, that whole area is sinking. It's gone. We have no plans to go back. And this stuff is going to fall in the wrong hands, so you got to better burn it.
Well, are we thinking that, you know what this kind of reminds me of? Is the Iraq One, when the Iraqis somehow in their own mind, and whether or not they got the wrong, they thought we gave...
Oh, you mean if we closed the road and we had for a turkey shoot?
No, I'm saying is when we, they thought, allegedly, some people wrote, that we had given them the green light to go into Kuwait, that we didn't care.
Well,
I don't know. I don't believe that, but I mean, I've read that.
But if you listen to who was the ambassador, the lady?
I forget.
I can look him up. But thank you. There is some discussion that may have been possible. I don't believe George Herbert Walker Bush would have done that.
No, I don't believe it either.
It's just too much. But I believe he may have. But the Saudis may have said, if that's what it takes for you to pay our debt, maybe you guys can just work something out, some negotiation, some merger. I don't think they thought he's going to be there in 2 days and then hang the officers from the street lamps. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, what they did. First of all, the royal family fled. First of all, boom, out. They were not willing to fight. The moment that vacuum started, the whole country collapsed in 36 hours. So,
well, I guess my question is,
some of these officers were absolutely brutalized.
What do you think this Erdogan, is he looking to annex essentially all the Turkish areas and make it part of Turkey? I mean, the Kurd areas?
I don't know how he can annex, but I think he's cleaning shop. He's just cleaning the what do you call PKK and that groups that are, he considers them as terrorism. The problem is that we have history, and we have now bordered nation states. Okay, but the aspirations of that history is not going to go away. So.
Well, Do you think?
Look at what Iran has done. Iran has got his finger from eastern part of China into Mediterranean, even past that, some part of Egypt too. How? Through proxy. Bad actors. Why? I don't know what they've done, but why? Because to them, this is their revisionist view of the history, and it's the new birth of Persian Empire. Why? And how did you manage it? Education. I mean, lack of education, and by religion. Religion thrives when you have a lot of poor people and you have undereducated people. Those two, and that's what they have done. If you think about it, these are all the minorities. Look at this. These are all failed states. Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, listen.
Well, that's,
we didn't have them. Check your
right. Before you came in, I was talking to Wayne about...
That was another failed state.
Well, before you came in, I was talking to Wayne about before World War One, and it was a book, Fall of the Dynasties, and all he did was talk about the corruption and all the dynasties, the increases in population growth, the incredible arms race, and... in the economic, you know, some people are making all the dough. This is in the Habsburgs, the Ottoman Empire.
Right.
And if you read the history, it just had to blow one day. I mean, there was no other place for this to go. It was a fire looking for a match. And, I'm wondering, I guess my question to you, I haven't been clear about it. Do you think that, for a trader term, do you think Trump and Erdogan, have essentially an out trade, that he thinks somehow he was given the go ahead. Now,
yeah.
I mean, do you think that there's a miscommunication?
And I would add Putin in there too. I just don't know what the track is. You know, where did it started? I think at this point, look, immediately after that, Putin was in Saudi Arabia and UAE. That's a signal we're out of Middle East. So what it started with, not business interests, business interests went back. Iran, they found oil in 1908, which became BP, they were an Anglo-Iranian oil company. And then, I don't know, but when was it, in the 30s, I think, or so, before that, was in, or maybe 20s, where they found oil in Saudis. But that's a business activity. But in terms of foreign policy and the interest, and then also entanglement, so in 53, the coup d'etat in the Mossadegh that put the Shah back in power with the, what we call the Dulles brothers, Alan Dulles at CIA, yep, and John Foster Dulles at the State Secretary of State, both, by the way, Princeton guys. They managed this, putting the consortium together, which brought Exxon and Chevron in, and Shell. And,
right, Bernie, you got 20 seconds. You only got 20 seconds. Can we fight the Fed here, or just roll with them?
My point is that started. Now we're leaving. We're done.
Yeah, it looks like we are. The idea that we can make our own oil now—we don't need to be there anymore. I don't know if
I agree with that part, but we've also caused some problems. The indigenous population is not going to forget the problems we've caused.
No. All right, Farrar, we got to talk to you next week, buddy. We got to go.
Yes, sir.
SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 25. Come back with Mr. David Adelman and talk about the markets.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. The Essential Magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. She's A.V. Angelica Vlasenko on the board. Say that 100 times fast. I practice it every morning in the car. I keep calling her by her name in the car just to... Yeah, it roll off my tongue. What do you think, AV?
I think you're doing pretty good.
Doing pretty good?
Yeah.
You didn't say great. You said pretty good. There you go. S&P futures up 8.25.
Angelica Vlasenko.
Yeah, okay. You say it better. But then again, your English is way better than mine. Well, it's mine is South Side. The only thing I know better than you is slang.
Yes, that's true. You got to teach me.
I'll teach you slang. Futures up 31.50.
Southside slang.
I don't know. You probably could go through life without learning that. It probably would be a good thing. Dow futures up 49. Over in Europe, we've got very slow. The DAX up 10. Call that flat. FTSE up 52 because of the chance of this Brexit deal. Oh, I'm not so sure that they could bring a motherhood deal to the Parliament right now and have the thing pass. We'll see. If it passes, it'll pass very closely. I hope it does. I mean, I need to do something. It's been too long fighting over this, for God's sake. Anyway, FTSE up 52.7%. CAC around down 12.2%. We're in Asia. Slow here as well. Nikkei down 21. This is after two big, huge days to the upside. Shanghai down 1. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 184.6%. Bonds, and this is starting to get interesting, and the stuff from overseas. Ours 1.75, so, again, up from the 1.48 bottom, I believe the bottom was. Bund, minus 0.39. Again, pretty far up from the minus 0.78, I saw it. Japan is minus 0.15 after being minus 0.24 forever. So they're creeping up as well. Now, whether we're starting to get a little sniff of inflation that I see everywhere, finally breaking in, I don't know. I'm not about to make that statement that people are finally seeing something that I see. But so you can't do that. Oil down 29 cents, 53.09. Brent down 32, 59.10. We've got gold up a dollar now, $14.95. Silver up 17 cents, $17.60. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Not much sports. The game got rained out last night.
Yeah, no sports for today.
Although we did have the fighter that died. That fought at the Wintrust Arena Saturday night. That's a horrible deal. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 37 minutes past the hour. 44 degrees currently in Chicago. The highest of the day will be 44 and the lowest 42. Looks like the day remains sunny, partly with some clouds. In Phoenix, we got 71 degrees right now, partially cloudy, but overall very nice and hot day with the highest of 95 and lowest 65. In traffic, we don't have any new accidents reported, so the good news. And in the bad news, we got some delays due to the heavy traffic, especially in certain areas like 90 East and West near Norwich, 94 on 2 Avenue going east, 290 looks especially tight from Wolf Road to Cicero Avenue, and Stevenson also looks pretty tight going north around Forest View. That's the traffic report for today.
The fighter I'm talking about, AV, is Patrick Day is the guy's name. He fought Saturday night in Chicago at the Wintrust Arena. They carried him out of the ring in a treachery because he did not regain consciousness and evidently lasted 4 days. So that's pretty friggin' awful, to be honest with you. Do we have David?
Yes.
David, are you here?
David, good
morning. I'm here.
I was talking to some guy last week that was so excited to go to those fights Saturday night because some guy was here from where you come from, AV. I think some guy was here from the Ukraine that was supposed to be fighting.
He actually won. He won American Boxer.
Was that guy's name Patrick Day?
Patrick Day is the guy who died.
Do you know what that name is actually very famous for?
No.
Pat Day?
Yeah, who was that? It was
a Hall of Fame jockey.
Yeah.
He won of the major championships. He won like 20. I mean, he was and he actually he started a little bit in Kentucky, but he started getting fame at Arlington Park, and then he moved to New York, California. Very famous in Kentucky, and he, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he retired, Hall of Fame jockey.
Who's the guy who wrote Secretary? Was that Pat Turcotte?
Ron Turcotte.
That must have been something, riding that horse. Wow.
Well, beyond, you know what happened after that?
No.
A year or two later, I think it was a traffic accident or whatever, and he was paralyzed and never rode again.
Oh, man, that's awful.
Yeah.
All right, we had a couple of guys talking about a bunch of conspiracy stuff. David, I cannot find anybody. Wayne has no sniff of why all of a sudden the Fed needs to do this, whether somebody's in trouble or whatever. But now we have the Fed porn mini, and I get a sense, really, the last week or two, that you can't fight the upside here because of the amount of money pouring in. I just looked here at the weekly money supply numbers, and which of course nobody's supposed to look at. The last 13 weeks, guess what?
Everybody used to.
I know. Guess what the growth in the
that and trade balance were the two most popular things. Nobody looks at trade balance anymore except for Donald Trump, and you're the only one who looks at money supply.
So Trump and I are like peas in a pod, is what you're telling me.
I mean, when money supply used to come out on Thursday afternoons, I mean, the traders were, they left the pit and stood by the ticker to get that, and then they wouldn't even wait to get back in the pit. They just do the hand signals to get the stuff off.
But now
the trade balance was like, they literally were on tiptoes waiting.
Well, then, but the sub-story there was, you couldn't have a TV in the pit because everybody thought it was too big of an advantage. So literally,
right,
you would have
right,
to leave
right.
the pit to watch the TV and go back in and trade. So
right.
guess what? If you there's a 13-week number and a 3-month number. Guess what the 13-week number is in growth of M2?
I would have no 9%. I have no idea.
Ding, 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 8.5.
That was a pure guess.
Would an economy growing 2, even if you figure that some of it's coming back to the Fed at night, how do you not have... I mean, in grad school, that would say, give yourself 6-8 months, you got 6% inflation. Because where does the money go?
They'll hide it, yeah.
But they want the market up for a re-election. Because not that they like the current president. It's the carnage he'll bring about their head and shoulders. Can you imagine all these right-wingers if all of a sudden the Fed went with a normal money supply growth and the market came back 15-20%, not even huge, even 10%, and Trump lost by like one electoral vote. Can you imagine the revolution would be with the Fed costing the election?
In our lifetime,
David, the Fed has turned 2 elections. In my opinion, from the research that I've read, and there are 2 elections that would have certainly changed history. And I don't know, good or bad. I mean, I just changed it. When Jimmy Carter was president, and everybody, oh God, Carter was, you know, he sucked, and Reagan was so good, and all this, whatever. The simple fact is, when Carter was a simpler guy, let's put it that way, and he was given a choice, we weren't exactly in a recession yet, but we were sort of heading that way. But this is what cards he was being dealt with, the people before. The inflation, everything was already there. But we weren't technically in a recession, even though we were in trouble with all
the
inflation.
Well, I think the Iranian hostage thing, you know, that was there, and then, you know, the gas lines and, you know, whatever. I mean, there was a lot of crap going on politically and geopolitically.
Don't disagree. I mean, I'm not, you know, like I was saying earlier, you can't just hold the world steady and only talk about one variable. You know, there's a million variables. But my point was that there was a specific, if you read, how's the name of the book, essentially history of the Federal Reserve. And actually one of the listeners sent it to me a couple years ago, and I dutifully read it. Carter was given a choice, essentially, when they put Paul Volcker in there. They said, do you want him to start pulling back on the money supply now, essentially throw us into this coming recession during an election year, or do you want us to put it off till after the election? And Carter said, which should be worse for the country? And the guy said, if we delayed it, it would be worse. And he said, don't delay it. So he essentially gave the go-ahead for the Fed, because the Fed can sort of time the recession. They can't stop it or start it when one's going to happen or not happen, but they can mess with the timing of it a little bit. So sure. Carter essentially said, go ahead and do it now. So at the end of his term, when we were heading into a recession, he essentially gave that go-ahead, for lack of a better term, because I don't think he thought that, that him being in office was all that, I won't say important, but that you shouldn't do stuff like that as a president, time things. And as soon as they told him it would be way worse if we put it off a year, he said, no, you got to do it now. So there's one election, I think, that was, I'm not saying that he would have won or Reagan would have lost, because like all the other stuff you talk about, but there was clearly an element of that election that had to do with the fact that we were, you know, now knee deep in a recession that we could have essentially escaped for 9 months. Not forever, but for a little while. And the other one, I honestly believe, if he was still alive, Bush 1 would say that Greenspan cost him his election. That Greenspan screwed him over by raising rates during the election process, and that's how Clinton got in. And whether it's true or not, you know, like I said, with a million other variables, this isn't the first time. Now, Trump is absolutely convinced that it's the Fed's job to keep this market going up higher, because he keeps telling the world, whether you just lost your job or didn't lose your job or you're working for $10 an hour, inflation is gagging you and you got no hospitalization, he's telling you that his scorecard is this market. Even if 80% of the people or 50% of the people don't have anything in the market, he's telling you that's how you should judge him, whether you're broke or not, which is insane, but he's getting away with it so far.
Well, I think there's another motive. I mean, let's face it, he can say, you know, oh, I'm not involved in Trump, you know, incorporated businesses anymore. Well, his name's on all the buildings and he still owes the Russians money and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. He's heavy, heavy, heavy into real estate. So if you're into real estate, what do you want? Lower rates. So it's not just the market. He's got his own personal scorecard that he doesn't want to talk about, and lower rates are very advantageous for those properties.
Well, absolutely, especially since the prices have stopped going up. But who are you going to sell them to if the rates go up?
Right.
So I don't think that you can necessarily, just in the last couple of weeks, David, I've sensed the tone change that every time the market takes a breather, the creep is to the upside. I used to think, I'm going to say back when the world was a little straighter, that you could tell the direction of the market on a Friday afternoon when everybody, you know, on a gorgeous day when everybody's out playing golf, or Christmas Eve or the day after Thanksgiving. The direction the market wants to go when nobody's looking at it, basically, is the underlying tone of the market. Now, I don't know if I would make that statement today, but I used to think that way. And now I'm thinking it's sort of the same way here. If nothing's going on, we can just see this $3 billion a day entering the system. And it's landing on somebody's desk. And it's not lowering credit card rates. It's not doing anything we want it to do from a middleman. You know, maybe, and by the way, the last couple of cuts, mortgage rates haven't gone down. Whether this is impacting individual people to the good side or not is very debatable. I mean, your credit card rates, I think, are up. But you can tell right now, I mean, today there's no real news. Here we up 9:50. I guess the Brexit thing is new. news?
Oh, I think there's a ton of news. And I was going to chime in with the rest of your stuff as far as, you know, mid-October, 15th to the 20th, is when, you know, little correction or even more than a little correction. August, September is the worst average month of the year. Then to mid-October, famous crashes, whatever. But then, you know, the mid-October to third week of October is the bottom, typically, other than 2018, where we had a historic, you know, terrible fourth quarter. But if you take 2018 out of the equation, from 20th of October to January 10th, most positive seasonal of the year. Well, what happens this year? We had a, you know, a little bit of a correction. August was not a good month. September started bad, finished halfway decent, a little weakness in early October. Then all of a sudden, you know, literally now, at least signs of a Brexit, you know, quote-unquote deal, signs of General Motors strike endings, signs that there's stimulus and easing of political pressures in Hong Kong. Lam there passing, you know, we're going to get housing for those that are sleeping in the streets. And we're going to ease up to stop the protests or whatever. I think there's a lot of news, and it's very funny, maybe coincidence, maybe not, that it all, oh, and the Fed, signs of further easing, not October, December, all happening third week of October. Coincidence? I don't know.
Well, the issue with that is,
I think there's a ton of news now.
Right. But I'm saying we're in a time where there's a ton of news and there's a ton and a half of news. I guess what I'm saying is we're in the ton stage. It's not like last Friday. You know? I mean, it's not like, you know.
Love that term.
Yeah. I mean, yes, we're in the, but we've had more than a ton. it's hard to get your finger on it, David. It really is. And I guess what I'm saying is the GM strike is one thing, but we didn't go down because of the strike, right? So, we didn't really go down because of Hong Kong. We're within an inch of all-time high. So it's not like we had this correction and now the it's not like long-term capital where we went way down because it was a problem. We fixed the problem and all of a sudden we came back up. We haven't gone down. I mean, and because nobody's going to let it.
Well, August was pretty bad down in this very start of September. It was the worst August in 8 years.
Okay. But we're not talking 25-30%. We're talking...
Yes, 5-6.
Yeah. On a year that's up a bunch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And yet, if you go back further, a year, year and a half, I mean, S&P 500... you know, is virtually unchanged, slightly higher. And if you take the five biggest stocks out, the S&P 500, or even equal weighting, it's lower.
Right.
So it just depends the time frame that you isolate.
Well, that's true. Before you came on, I was saying, I've never found it easier, David, to lie with statistics than right now. I spend half of my time reading stuff that people send me from various sides. By the way, the right wing's leading. They send more stuff. And you can sit there and somebody will write an article and they jump back and forth between the mean and the median to prove their point. And I'm sitting there, wait a minute. You use the mean in this paragraph, now you're using the median in the next paragraph. You can't do that if you want to be straight. But nobody wants to be straight. They want to tell their story. I was just reading one earlier that the market's in deep trouble because I'm being, you know, bullish here. I mean, all my people are long, so I am bullish. We're in deep trouble because the market is up 20% this year and earnings are only up 1%. But now if you take what you just said, what I mentioned earlier, if you start from January of 18 instead of 19, the market's up, I'm going to say the market's up 1.5%.
Right.
And earnings are probably up 2%. So we're, you know, you're sort of right on board there. If you take the 2 year or whatever that would be, 21 month approach, that's a non-argument, right?
Right. And the other thing that I've referred to so many times, and it's not a factor for day, week, months, maybe even, you know, 3 or 4 months, but eventually the money seeks where it can get returned. And you can say it's this, it's that, you know, money supply, and I'm not taking away from that, very important, stock buybacks, financial engineering, 0%, you know, or 1.25%, you know, borrow to buy back stock and whatever. A lot of it's engineered and not, you know, exactly related to earnings, or they're boosted up because of share buybacks. I get all that. That said, you know, I think earnings yield, if you flip the PE, is very seriously important. And if you flip about a 17, 16.5, 17 PE, and you flip it, it's about, you know, 6, roughly. So 6%, you know, earnings yield from the market. And then you look at a 10-year at, you know, 2.25 or whatever. You know, the stocks look relatively cheap.
Well, that's the... I don't know that I've ever had people lose so much money, David, with the concept of relative value.
I know, but that's what I understand when you say people, individuals, and even, you know, whatever, California, you know, teachers union and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. But the big institutions, the insurance companies, whatever, the real major movers of capital, that's what, for the long, long term, that's what they're looking at.
Well, how good do the Japanese do when the property values in Tokyo in, like, was it the 80s, went to the absolute moon, and they said, these Americans are idiots, look how low their stuff is valued, we'll just buy everything over there and we'll take the offer. And 10 years later, they puked it out for, you know, half of what they paid for it. You know, that was
I get it. But it depends on what you buy.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, they were paying tens of millions of dollars for art pieces and 10, 15, and $20 million for golf courses and, you know, multiples of, you know, value or price for, you know, memberships on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, whatever. Yeah, they bought the top in virtually everything.
But some
racehorses, you name it.
Well, I know. I mean, we're not 25 anymore, David. So we're conflicted in the different generations that we grew up in. And I look at like a Netflix, and I am astounded that they have been able to change their model, and really on the fly, as good as any firm I've ever seen over the last 20 years. I mean, they went from delivering it to your mailbox to the next iteration to making their own content. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a company, and I'm sure if I thought about it, I would name a few others, but that has been able to change really their whole business model on the fly as quickly as these guys. And yet, on the other hand, that's my non-Luddite personality, and I think they should have some kind of a premium to the stock, okay, which they do. Now the question is how much. If I want to go with my, you know, the old grumpy Eastern European owner of the six flat on the block I grew up, you know, maybe not when I grew up, but when I was real young, he's going to say, okay, it's trading, how much trading? 309? All right, so they're making $30 a year, and they're sending me a check for 12. And I go, not exactly. Well, what are they making? Well, maybe this year, since their profit's up, they might make 6. Well, how much am I getting? You ain't getting squat. $310? You buy it. You know?
No, I agree. So, I mean, and beyond that, yeah, I understand what you're saying as far as changing the business model and getting prime content and winning, you know, awards at, you know, all these whatever things. That's all well and good, but, you know, multiple of 90, and you look at Disney, not exactly the same business, but they not only have content, but they make it. They don't, you know, tend to buy it. And media and, you know, various other things that Netflix is in, and there you have a PE of 16. Is Netflix worth, you know, 5.5 times, you know, because they're growing faster when Disney is coming into their ballpark and competing directly? I can't imagine that Netflix is worth 5.5 times. I'm shocked that it's worth 1 times Disney.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what I'm saying, David. And if, out of all the things, the timing stuff that you like to talk about, we only got a minute here, the timing stuff that you like to talk about, which is fascinating, and you're way better at that than I am, some of the stuff that Fari likes to talk about that he's better at, the thing that has always intrigued the living bleep out of me, to be honest with you, is when a company goes from being oh no, they're just going to make nothing but money. Boy, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to do this. And all of a sudden, one day, everybody wakes up and said, for God's sake, they're just a retailer. Right? Like it happened to eBay. One day, they're just a retailer. You know, right. Same thing happened with, what was it, NBC? That traded for more before the first TV came out than it did for like the next 20 years, whatever he had at TV. Railroads. I mean, once the railroad's built and it's starting, you go, wait, okay, these guys are making $40 a day times 365 days. It's worth this. Well, before that, it might have traded five times that. You wouldn't believe what these guys are going to make, right? But if I could call those kinds of turns, those to me are the most interesting things out there. And boy, they're hard to call.
No, I get it.
Well, buddy, what do you think? We're bullish the rest of the week? It sounds like you're saying yes.
This is the best period of the year. Nevertheless, as I've said so many times before, S&P cash between 3009 and 3019, I think you have to do some hedging. And if you are risk accepting, sell a little bit.
All right, bud. Have a good week. Okay. S&P futures right, up 950, and NASDAQ futures up 34. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. By the way, Mr. Lou Michaels will be on tomorrow. He couldn't make it today.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.